to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. Our Sunday services are at 8 and 10 a.m., and all are welcome. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, November 13th, 2022, by Eric Williams.
Well, would you like the bad news first or the worst news? You know, the gospel means good news, and then we get something like this. Jesus says, hey, this temple is going to be torn down, which has stood for hundreds of years, the center of our faith as Jews. It's going to be ripped apart. But before that happens, guess what? You're going to be arrested and betrayed, and your family's going to turn against you, and there's going to be earthquakes and wars and famines, and oh boy, I can't wait. Isn't that going to be wonderful? I think the theme of Jesus' teaching today, however, is that things are not always what they seem. Things are not always what they seem. So the other day, I was raking leaves, as it feels like I've been doing every day for the last 2 weeks. There's still some leaves on the tree in my backyard. It's killing me. I keep waiting and waiting for them to fall. But I'm raking and raking, and I was thinking about how beautiful the leaves are, how much I detest them when they're on the ground. But when they're on the tree, I love them. And this year in particular was stunning. There's a tree behind our house that was just lit up. When the sun hit it, it was a beautiful, vibrant yellow. And there have been some beautiful red trees and orange. I just love the fall colors. And for most of my life, I have believed that those colors happen during the fall, right? That the color changes because of various things, the temperature or the water or so forth. Only recently did I find out that, in fact, those leaves have been that color from the very beginning. Now, you probably all knew this, but I didn't. The chlorophyll in the leaf, the green, comes on and it covers up the actual color of the leaf. And then when the fall comes and the days get shorter and it gets colder, that chlorophyll leaves the leaf, as it were, and what's revealed is the beauty that has been hiding there the entire time. Things are not always what they seem. Those beautiful green leaves have been beautiful red, orange, and yellow leaves all this time. Another famous example of this was when I studied art history in high school and college, one of the really significant paintings that you study is the Sistine Chapel, you know, Michelangelo's great work. You know, think of him on that scaffold on his back, painting on the ceiling for months and months, and there's some hilarious things in there. He puts little jokes in. He was fighting with a particular cardinal that he didn't get along with, who was, I think, shorting him on some of his payments, and so he shows his rear end in the Sistine Chapel if you look kind of really carefully. But anyway, art historians have talked a lot over the years about how Michelangelo carefully painted this beautiful kind of smoky color, right? There's this sort of dark and beautifully kind of textured paint. Well, in the 80s and 90s, they cleaned the ceiling. And guess what? What was revealed was absolutely vivid, almost cartoonish colors in the Sistine Chapel. For decades, art historians had been drawing conclusions about Michelangelo, which were completely wrong. He had painted in a whole different way. We just hadn't seen it because of years and years of dirt and candle smoke that had obscured the stunning beauty of his paintings. I think this happens to us all the time. We have all kinds of mental biases which prevent us from seeing the deeper truth. We see what's in front of us, but we don't see what's really going on. Things are not always what they seem. And so it is with the disciples on that day with Jesus. They've come to Jerusalem. This is Holy Week. This is Palm Sunday. Jesus has come into town. The disciples are there, and Jesus knows that the end is nigh. He knows that the crucifixion is about to happen and the resurrection. It's all happening within a few days. The disciples, as usual, are oblivious. They're like tourists from the countryside in the big city. You know, Garrison Keillor used to say, you can always tell a Midwesterner in New York City, because they walk around like this with their wallet hanging out of their back pocket. They were like Midwesterners in New York City. They're looking up at the buildings going, this temple is amazing. Look how big it is. And Jesus is like, have you not heard a word I've been saying for 3 years? Don't you understand what is really going on here? God is about to do something new. This temple, which has stood for hundreds of years, is going to be destroyed. In fact, it was. 37 years after Jesus' words, the Romans destroyed that temple, knocked it down, and obliterated it. All that's left today is the Western Wall, sometimes called the Wailing Wall, where Jews to this day will place prayers in the cracks between the stones. Those of us who went on the pilgrimage got to stand there, and it's a very holy place. But it's not a building anymore. It's a ruin. Jesus knew that the real work that God was doing had nothing to do with buildings. It had to do with the coming of Christ and the offer of salvation to the entire world. New heavens and a new earth. It was the prophecy of Isaiah coming true. The prophecy that Isaiah had proclaimed hundreds of years before that, before Herod's temple was built. Isaiah looked ahead to a time when God was going to undo all the horrible things that had happened in the world. Suddenly now, in this new creation, the wolf will dwell with the lamb. They won't be fighting each other or eating each other anymore. There'll be peace. There'll be unity. There'll be abundance. There'll be health. All of creation, the way God intended it from the beginning, will be restored and perfected. Jesus is trying to help his disciples see that vision and not just the pretty buildings. I think we have the same challenge as Christians today. We look at what's right in front of us, and we often miss the deeper meaning. Raise your hand if you've ever heard in a sermon these words or something like it. The church is not a building. Anybody ever hear that? It's kind of a cliche. The church is not a building, right? This is kind of what Jesus is saying to the disciples. Well, you know, we got to live that, didn't we, a couple of years ago. When COVID hit and everything was shut down, we suddenly had to pivot and reimagine church without our beloved building. We put a lot of energy and time and care into this building, and suddenly it was gone. And we wondered, can we be the church? I know all the clergy I talked to during the early days of the pandemic were like, what's going to happen? Will people come back after this pandemic? Will we still have a church after we've shut the doors for months? Well, you know the answer to that. We found a way to continue to be the church, to live into that question. Yes, we can be the church without a building. We can worship watching Father Eric and his dog in his backyard. All right, it's a little weird. I'm kind of glad we don't have to do that again, but it was a challenge. You know, we found a way to worship. We found a way to be together. Some of us did noonday prayer every weekday for a year and a half. We were able to do our work with SOS, Feeding the Hungry, with Neighborhood House, doing our Christmas baskets, keeping in touch with our kids in Sunday school through bags that we delivered to homes. All of you found a way to stay connected and to be the church. You saw a glimpse of that deeper reality. We lived into it. And I believe because of that, we've emerged stronger than we were before. the pandemic, as a congregation, as a people of faith, more united, more together. I believe this is our challenge as individuals as well. You know, it's very often when someone has a crisis in their life that they tell me afterwards, I didn't want that crisis to happen. I don't think God caused it, but you know what? It helped me get my life reordered. It put my priorities back in line. Somebody told me with a very severe cancer diagnosis, I feel like I am living fully for the first time. Think about that. It took a cancer diagnosis to feel that they were appreciating every day, loving each moment, treasuring each relationship. I think that's often what happens to us. Pray that it's not cancer or some other crisis, but every one of us will face a crisis of one kind or another. Jesus is talking about the end of the world and the apocalypse, but apocalypse only means a crisis that reveals a hidden truth. That's what apocalypse means. And I think apocalypses happen for us every day. Challenges like the pandemic, crises in our personal life, or in our church, or in our nation, and those crises reveal a deeper truth. My dad volunteered in 1944, when he was 17, I wanna say, for World War II. You know, it was after Pearl Harbor, and he tried to enlist earlier, but they wouldn't let him. With a note from his mom, he was able to enlist at 17. He could not wait to serve his country. He saw himself as part of a grand struggle for freedom in this world. And as we mark a couple days ago, Veterans Day, it strikes me that our veterans know a deep truth about that, don't they? That it is crises which reveal a hidden truth, that we are all united in the service of something greater. Through that service, they bonded together. My dad talked about the time after, you know, his generation went through the Great Depression, they went through World War II, and they emerged from that with a sense, now it wasn't perfect, we still had civil rights to go, right? We still had a lot of inequalities in our nation, but there was a kind of feeling that we were in this together. There was a sense when people had done their victory gardens at home and had bought war bonds, and they felt a sense of unity that sadly then slipped away. So I think our veterans can teach us that. I think our great saints of the church can teach us that. I think we need to ask ourselves, what is the hidden reality that the crises of our life are revealing to us? How can we become truly the people that God has called us to be? How might these challenges equip us in a way to live lives that are more joyful, abundant, and loving? I think the answer is by holding on to the vision that we see in our scriptures, the vision of the new creation from the prophet Isaiah, the vision that Jesus taught and lived in his time with the disciples, the vision of God's glory with Christ seated at the right hand of God, with God's reign of peace and justice taking hold and remaking all of us into the society that God intends, where there is no more hunger, there is no more injustice, there is no more suffering or alienation, but we are all known and loved and free to be part of God's glorious reign. If we can hold on to that vision, we can endure the challenges of this life, which will come to all of us, and we will know ourselves truly to be part of God's reign. Amen.